anybody who attends a meeting has the right and the responsibility to improve the dynamics of the meeting. So we all have that right and responsibility to communicate and improve the quality and the dynamics of the meeting.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Mark Elwood. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Mark. One, he is a strategic plan facilitator, trainer, team builder, and time study consultant. Two, Mark keeps fit by regularly riding his bike to play intense games of squash, occasionally winning against opponents half his age. And three, creativity is one of Mark's strengths. He is an inventor, a poet, and a keen puzzle solver. Mark Elwood, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Great to be here, George.
Delighted to be talking with you today, and I know we're going to have fun. It was many years ago that you were a guest on my radio show, Business in Motion, and like it was many years ago, and glad that we're still here around. Today, Mark, we're going to take a look at what some people hate about business and how to make it better. And that thing we hate is called meetings. Where do you come across a meeting? Should we have more meetings, less meetings, shorter meetings, longer meetings? What the heck can we do at these meetings?
We should have effective meetings. You know, you mentioned my sports in the beginning. I was thinking about my son who trains incredibly hard to be in a rowing regatta, and a rowing race is like 5 minutes or so. And he really trains hard for that. How much training do we do for a meeting that lasts an hour or an hour and a half? Not much at all. And so the advantage of a meeting is you're bringing all these different people together who've got different backgrounds and training and input and so on. And that's also the disadvantage. They all bring their own agendas or their own points of view. And that's why people have trouble with meetings, because you've got all these different personalities. Whereas if you can get them to work well, then you're on your way. And we talk about your intended message. And part of that is communicating well during a meeting, so that you're not going astray all over the place. I do have a definition of a meeting, the purpose of a meeting. And people go, oh, you know, what are we doing? The weekly meeting updates, this and that, and so on. Having studied this for many years, my definition of the purpose is quite simple. It's to convene stakeholders to make decisions that lead to action. To convene stakeholders who make decisions that lead to action. When you have that focus on decisions and action, that gives a focus to your meeting. Now, there's a couple of exceptions, safety meetings and daily hubs and so forth. But for the most part, that will make our meetings more efficient.
Mm. And what I'm hearing most importantly is the purpose is to create action from the meeting.
That's right. Something different is going to happen after the meeting. Somebody is going to do something that they weren't doing before, or they're going to do it differently. But some action is going to happen as a result by one or more people. And that's what you're aiming to achieve by the end.
People might come at meetings differently if they realize that the purpose of the meeting isn't to get together and share ideas. It's to clarify the next step in our process.
Yeah, you're making a decision that leads to that action. So sharing ideas will be part of that. But it's focused on making those decisions that lead to action. Someone's not going to make the decision for you. The group is making the decisions. If someone else is making the decision, that's just an announcement, I suppose. And we don't call that a meeting. It's just an announcement. It can be done differently. But the group is trying to collectively make that decision.
Which suggests that we value the contributions of each individual in the group.
That is correct. Everybody brings something different. And if you don't have something to bring, then you don't need to be there.
ironic. Earlier, you mentioned that one of the issues or challenges of a meeting is that everybody brings something different. They bring a different perspective. Therefore, they don't always see eye to eye and communicate effectively because they're coming from different perspectives. And yet it's those different perspectives that's the valuable part in creating the decision.
Exactly. So as the chairperson, even if you're not the official chairperson, even as an attendee, you want to harness that and focus it. And by the way, I have a rule about meetings. Anybody who attends a meeting has the right and the responsibility to improve the dynamics of the meeting. So here we go with communication and your intended message. You know, the meeting's getting off track. You can say, hey, we seem to be off track a little bit here. Can we get back to the subject at hand? Or often the conclusion isn't clear. I'm a little bit confused. We went back and forth on that. What did we just agree to again? So you don't have to be the chairperson to be able to make those kind of statements. Anybody can speak up and someone next to you will nudge you and go, yeah, good for you. So we all have that right and responsibility to communicate and improve the quality and the dynamics of the meeting.
That's insightful, Mark, because what I'm hearing there is we can't sit back and say, well, it's not my meeting. It doesn't matter to me what happens. I just showed up because I was invited. I have to be here. I don't want to be here. It's not my meeting. I don't care what they do. So that kind of talk isn't allowed, because if you're there in a meeting, you're there for a reason and you are part of the decision.
Yeah, you come home to your spouse and say, oh, honey, I went to this horrible meeting today. Well, you didn't, you know, make a difference. And so that's your opportunity, is to speak up and to try and make that meeting better. Even if you're not in charge of the meeting, even if you're the lowliest person, you can interrupt and ask for clarity, ask to get back on track. And some other things you can do as well.
Mark, you help companies facilitate strategic planning meetings. What are some of the tools or techniques that you use to improve the communication and effectiveness of the meeting?
You know, we can start right at the very beginning with introductions. Sometimes not everybody knows each other that well. And so someone will say, well, you know, go around and introduce yourself. And so from my experience doing teaching effective speaking, I came up with a technique that works. And it's kind of fun. It's a sort of an icebreaker. You ask people to introduce themselves and tell everyone one interesting thing about yourself that most people don't know. So it could be about one of your hobbies or sport you do or something. However, there's a bit of a catch. In the first sentence, you cannot say the words, me, my, or your name. And you can't use a trite greeting like good morning. So you can't say, hi, I'm Mark Elwood and I'm the production supervisor. You can't do that. You've got to come up with some other introduction or first sentence that doesn't use your name or I or me. And some people will have to think about it a little bit, but it makes for some interesting introductions. And then something interesting about yourself that most people don't know. So it's kind of an icebreaker. It's a different way of doing introductions, and I offer that to people. And if somebody does mess up a little bit and say their name or say I, that's okay. Just skip on to them and let them go on with that. So that's one way of doing introductions at the very beginning.
And I can see that would be an interesting challenge, because here I am mentally trying to do that myself right now. And it's difficult not to use, you're introducing yourself, but you can't mention those pronouns that or nouns that talk about yourself in the first part of the sentences.
Well, you could say something like, it's really terrific to be here with the team to solve this problem. My name is Mark Elwood. I mean, you do something like that, but it just creates a little bit of a difference. So, and you can't repeat something that somebody else did. So that's at the very start of the meeting. And I offer that as a little bit of a trick. So the other thing at meetings is sometimes you want to focus a discussion. And sometimes I use breakout groups and I'll have people go off into little groups and so on. And sometimes what'll happen is, okay, go and, you know, we've got flip charts or something. Okay, you guys go talk about how we're going to solve the production problem and just go and write your answers on a flip chart and then you can report back. That's not a good way to do it, because the question is a little bit vague. And when people come back to report from their flip chart, they go on and on and they'll say, well, we talked about this and we looked at this alternative and so on. So what you want to do in your communication is give very precise directions or instructions for the question and for the answers. In strategic planning, so for instance, we'll talk about one section is determining your long-term goals. And we'll talk about the SMART formula, specific, measurable, appropriate, realistic, and timely. We'll give them that sort of formula and say, okay, we want your group to write your goals. Now, for each of your goals, you only get 5 to 10 words. Or maybe it's come up with some strategic directions once we've determined our goals. Start with a verb. And again, you only get 5 to 10 words. And that really focuses the group on thinking about how do we sort of focus our thinking on what we really want to say here about what needs to be done rather than writing paragraphs on a flip chart. And so sometimes we do those in small cards and we put them all up on the wall and then people can see them on the wall. So there's a couple of techniques there, but it's really asking a specific question and asking for a particular format for the response. This is when you're doing breakout groups and such. It works really well.
And Mark, what I'm hearing there is a little bit of structure.
Yeah.
To keep people focused.
For sure. It really works well. Here's another one that I don't use too often, but you'll find on a particular hot topic, you'll see discussions going back and forth and back and forth. Well, the first thing is, have you got all the data? Have you got all the facts? If not, sometimes you need to say, maybe we should assign a couple of people to do that research and come back to the next meeting. So take it out of the meeting because you just don't have the data. But let's say you do and you're debating something back and forth and it just seems to be going nowhere and there's a lot of heated discussions. I do something called veto values. I say, okay, tell you what, we're going to ask about this particular topic. Maybe it's what kind of, you know, for nonprofit groups, what kind of fundraising do we think we need to be doing? Someone thinks it's an event. Someone thinks it's direct mail or whatever. So it's going back and forth and there's no resolution. And so what I say is, okay, tell you what, let's just list out, everybody can say one phrase about this subject, but everybody gets a veto or any one individual. So I'm only going to write on, and I'll write on, as a facilitator, I'll write on a flip chart, just the things that don't get vetoed. So someone will say, I think we need to have an annual mail out campaign for our fundraising. And someone says, no, veto that. Oh, okay. All right. Well. And ultimately you get back to values. Someone will say fundraising is an important aspect of what we do here. Oh, okay. Yeah. That, okay. So you're getting back to some values and it can work for any type of discussion. And you get back to those core values that people agree on rather than the ones they don't agree. And everyone gets a veto. It may not completely solve the problem, but at least it lays down some things that you can all agree on. And it's a powerful tool for when you see some really heated discussions on something. So that's what I call veto values. And it's a good one.
In key phrase there is what people agree on. And often in a meeting, we're most outspoken about what we disagree upon.
Correct. In those cases, sometimes it's just worth trying to understand what it is you disagree on. And so that's where empathetic listening comes in. And everybody's heard of this before. It works in, you know, personal one-on-one communications, maybe with your spouse, but it also works in group situations. So if you can say, all right, what I hear you saying is you believe X, Y, and Z. And the person, well, no. And then you repeat, okay, so what you're saying then, I didn't get that right, but here's what you're saying. Yeah, that's right. If you can create that empathetic listening, you're not exactly solving the problem, but it gets you to a sense of agreement about what each other is feeling or thinking or the agreed upon facts. And it can take you a long way. Now you can ask the other person, do you understand my point of view? Well, yeah, I understand. And can you repeat what I said a few minutes ago? And so that's how you get them to engage in this empathetic listening. And so, you know, back to the intended message, that's, you're making sure that message is clearly understood, both sides. And again, that should lead to some ideas to solve the problem or solve the differences by at least understanding where everybody's coming from. And, you know, you think about hot political topics, Think about the hottest debate out there in the public realm. If each side could say, okay, I think what your position is this, and I think you're saying such and such. And the other person says, yeah, and you're coming from here. At least we try and understand ourselves on those two rather than trying to convince. It's hard to convince people in a meeting. It's, you know, people are entrenched. And so you got to find common ground, and listening is the first step.
So we're not there to convince people. We're there to understand them and demonstrate we understand them. How do we get to a common decision if someone isn't convinced?
There could be a little bit of convincing. Here's some facts that I gathered. Here's some evidence. Here's what happened last year and so on. So you're presenting your case, and it's based on facts, not just your opinion. And someone might go, okay, well, I see now. I get it. So there's that. The other thing is you're looking for compromise, ultimately. And not always. Sometimes it's going to be this or that, but sometimes there's a compromise. And so the question you can ask there is, can you live with that? And so you might go around the room in a meeting of seven or eight people and you say, okay, let's just, you know, do a quick straw poll here. Everybody who just let me know who's in favor of this. You're not making the final decision, but you're trying to get a straw poll. And then you say, gosh, it seems like six of the eight of us are agreed about this particular course of action. And so you turn to the other two and you say, okay, we got your points of view and we understood that. We seem to have a strong consensus here. Would you be able to live with that? And the person says, well, I'd really prefer my thing, but yeah, I think I can live with it. And so there you go. Or you aim for a compromise in between and you ask them, is there something else you can contribute that makes it more livable, so to speak? But we get entrenched in these tough positions. And sometimes people are actually amenable to saying, well, yeah, I suppose I could be okay with that. And that's what you want to aim for.
Mark, when you're in a meeting where there are strong opposing positions, can it be useful to take a break?
Sure. And the breaks take different forms, right? You could say, all right, it's, you know, we've been here an hour and a half. Let's just go out for coffee or whatever. And sometimes during the coffee break, there'll be a couple of more discussions and you see things that are worked out. Sometimes the break is we just don't have the evidence we need here. We've got to gather some more data. So let's park this, not urgent to make this decision at this meeting, but we can come back the next time. And could you two folks, and you assign people, maybe it's a subcommittee if you're on a board, or maybe it's just a couple of people if it's a corporate meeting, could you two go and, you know, research this and come back with a recommendation? And ideally, that recommendation would be approved by the group. If you've assigned the people, if you've set the parameters about what you want them to explore, then that should be pretty straightforward. So yes, indeed, a break can work.
When we're in a meeting and it appears to be going off track, what can the individuals who all have a joint responsibility here, they're maybe not the chair of the meeting, but especially a junior person who's thinking, oh, they told me I'm supposed to be responsible. This doesn't seem to be going the right way. What can they say without offending the chair and, most importantly, embarrassing themselves?
Presumably, at the beginning, you have some kind of agenda. We didn't talk about that, but you've sent it out in advance or you've presented it. And it doesn't have to be that detailed. It could be just in point form, the three or four things we're going to cover today. But if it is a little more detailed, that's helpful, of course. So that junior person can say, gee whiz, we seem to be off track here. I'm looking at the agenda and the time we've got left. And should we get back to this subject at hand? And typically someone will say, oh, yeah, right. Okay, yeah, sure. And if they don't, they say, no, this isn't worth, you know, exploring. Then you've made a little bit of a change to the agenda and maybe that's worth doing, but you all recognize that. So it's coming back to what the meeting was intended to do. And that's how that junior person can have an impact.
What part might humor play in a challenging meeting?
I like humor and it's going to be spontaneous. You're not going to say, you know, it's time for a joke. Yeah, that won't work. You could make a joke about, boy, we've been here a while. I wonder if we got to get some, you know, fresh food to keep us going overnight or something like that. Now you got to be careful because you don't want to suggest that it's going on that long. But indeed, humor can work. The humor that should not work is directed towards other people. So you don't want to make jokes about some personal aspect of them or something they said. You don't want to make fun of them. Self-deprecating humor, of course, is the best kind because you're making fun of yourself and everybody can relate to that. So don't do humor at other people's expense. Maybe just something about the situation. Maybe there's a truck backing up outside and you say, oh, there's something about that. So you just draw attention to something fun. Yeah, we could all use a little bit of a humor, a little bit of a break now and then.
Or it could be something as simple. Gee, did you hear my stomach rumble? Have we been in here that long? Is it time for dinner already?
That's a good one. Sure.
Mark, what other tools and techniques have you seen or used in the meetings you've been part of?
I mentioned the agenda at the beginning. There's also, for a really hot topic, hot or, you know, controversial, sometimes people are a little reluctant to get things off their chest. And the worst thing you want to have happen in a meeting is where somebody's sitting in a corner like this and, you know, they're really not on board. And so as a facilitator, I watch for that kind of body language. And I don't call them out quickly. I'll say, this is some heated stuff. George over there, George, I notice you seem to be a little bit uncomfortable with this. And I wonder if you might share your thoughts on this. So I'm saying your name and I'm giving you lots of time to think about it. I wouldn't go, George, what's up? Yeah, you know, that wouldn't work. You've got to take your time allowing the person, even like on Zoom meetings or other Teams meetings and such, I'll have a little list of people, the attendees, and I'll say, okay, the next three people to get input are, you know, George, Sally, and so and so, and list off the names. Another technique for these hot topics, though, when you think, oh, there's something really on people's minds, is you give them a little card or a sheet or something and say, I'd like you to write down an answer to this question. It could be what's on your mind, which is a little bit kind of general, or it could be very specific. What's your opinion on such and such a topic? And we're going to share these anonymously. So you write your answer on the card and then you gather up the cards and then redistribute them to everybody. And everybody reads what's on the card that they received. So everybody's going to read someone else's comment and they don't say, this is from Mary. They don't. It's just whatever's on the card. And so that allows you to have all that stuff expressed and it gets parked sort of in the middle of the table. And as a facilitator, then, you can decide what are you going to do. There's this really hot topic that needs to be explored further or not or whatever. Sometimes as a facilitator, you can take the temperature at the beginning of the meeting and say, you know, what are you looking forward to from this meeting if it's a long one? And at the end, you can go around and don't ask people just, okay, you know, how do you think the meeting went? But give a more specific question. How are you now feeling about the future directions on such and such? And hopefully, if you've done your job well, people say, I'm more optimistic than when I came in, or I'm feeling good about such and such. And that's a nice way of wrapping up the meeting and making sure that you've got that good sense of team consensus.
I like that idea. Wrap up the meeting with not a did you like the meeting, but more about how do you feel about the decision that was made?
Yeah, feelings are important. And I guess I'm a sort of left brain guy. I tend to be very analytical and such, but you want to be able to express feelings. And remember, as we think about messages that we give to others, you can never argue with someone's feelings. I'm worried about this. I was frustrated at that. Well, you have no reason to be frustrated. That doesn't work. They are frustrated. And so what you want to do then is what I call deep listening and say, tell me more about that. What is it specifically you're frustrated about? Well, I'm frustrated because we didn't raise enough money last week in our fundraising. Okay, so tell me more. Well, the problem was, and so you keep probing for deeper answers and don't allow people to have those sort of superficial responses. You know, in a more of a corporate meeting, our marketing isn't working. Well, maybe, but there's much more detail to that. So you ask and you keep probing. Tell me more about that and use open-ended questions, not, okay, was the marketing better or worse than last year? Better. Well, that doesn't tell you anything. But so you say, tell me more about, or paint me a picture of such and such, or can you describe for me? Use those open-ended questions. Even if you're not the chairperson of the meeting, if somebody's got something important to say, you want to understand that in more detail. And then you can do that empathetic listening. You can say, oh, well, so what you said is, and so those two tie together.
Mm. Paint me a picture. That phrase resonates with me. I like the way that looks.
Yes, it's a journalist, a Canadian journalist from way back, would use those kinds of expressions, and they work really well. So, sure.
Facts versus feelings. How do we recognize and differentiate and still accommodate both?
They both have their place. Our sales were down 20% last year, and I feel really frustrated that we aren't doing more in the marketing realm to work on that. Okay, so you're separating them. And, you know, I always look for evidence. What's our evidence here? Sometimes I'll do a business review and I ask just three questions. You know, what did we accomplish? Those are the facts. The facts are our sales were down, or we introduced these new programs, or whatever. Then the next question is, what did we learn? And people tend to think, well, we need to, or we should. No, don't say that. What did we learn? We learned that customers were reluctant to come to our store because of COVID, or social media for our brand seems to be picking up steam, and people are really engaging with that. And then the third question is, well, what does this mean for the future? Oh, that means then that we need to be investing more in social media, or we need to be changing this program, or so on. So what happened? What did we learn? And what does this mean for the future, for the strategic plan, for instance? So that's a good way of separating, understanding the facts, and the feelings is a little bit, you know, what does this mean for the future? There's some feelings involved there, because ultimately, you don't know what the future is going to bring. And there's one, by the way. Watch out for people who are speculating, because speculating is a kind of a feeling. You know, when this happens, we're going to, you know, the business is going to tank. Or if we do that, whatever. And maybe, but it's ultimately a guess. And so you have to watch out for those speculative ideas, because people say, oh, that's not going to work. When you do this, this is going to happen. You know, a classic one, because I take an interest in urban issues. Someone says, well, we want to close down this street and make it more pedestrianized. Oh, no, traffic's going to go on all the side streets and so on. Well, that kind of sort of sounds logical. The evidence is not that at all. When you close down and create a pedestrianized street, traffic dissipates, and the implied demand just sort of disappears. So I can go on about that. But watch out for people who are speculating with their emotions rather than dealing with facts. Last year, this happened and we learned that. It's a much better way to go.
Mark, you help organizations facilitate strategic meetings. When would they know that it's the time to call someone in to facilitate their meeting?
Lots of not-for-profit groups do that because they don't have the expertise internally, but I've done it for large corporations as well. And so they're saying, we've got a lot of these stakeholders at this meeting, and they all got these different ideas and so on. And we need someone who's going to be a little bit objective, a little bit of an outsider. And the thing about me and others who do this, we don't have to understand the business that thoroughly. We should have some understanding of what's going on. And by reviewing some stuff in advance or doing a pre-interview, that helps. But we bring an outside perspective and the ability to organize those discussions so that it keeps people on track. So you got a hot button issue. I got a strategic plan. I do some training as well. And so that's the time to bring in an outsider who can really help you move along towards making decisions that lead to actions.
Mm. And when you come in to a group like that, you come without all the baggage of, you know, of what it is. When you're working with people every day, you develop friendships. You also develop enemies and hot buttons and opinions. And so you come in without that and treat everyone pretty much as an equal.
Yes. Equal is interesting you say that, George, because It could be the senior vice president and it could be the production planner. They're both in the same room. And indeed, I split them up at different tables and so on. They're all equal in that space. Now, the decisions might go to somebody for approval, or they might go to your board or something like that later on. But in the room, indeed, you want to treat everybody as equal. There's no person. And so I talk about the values at the beginning. It's, by the way, it's worth setting up the values that everybody has an equal voice. Everybody will hear others and be heard. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. If you can set the sort of ground rules at the beginning, then everybody goes, okay, yep, then we're all equal here and we're working together.
For people who'd like to learn more about Mark and his services, you can find him at terrificteams.com and you can find that link in the description below. Mark, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a team leader who has a planning meeting coming up to make some major decisions in the direction of the organization and give them advice about how to get to the goal, the decision, and how to ensure that that happens. And if you could give them one, two, or three pieces of advice, maybe it's something you said already, what might that be?
It would be planning your agenda in advance. And the way you plan that agenda is you build on items one after the other. Let's review what we did last year. Let's brainstorm. Let's select some actions and then let's choose them. By the way, very quickly on choosing, sometimes I literally have people walk up to these cards on the wall and put little marks on them to vote for them. And sometimes voting is good. It's selecting the best ideas rather than debating out the worst ones. So yeah, prepare in advance and think about a logical flow through those different steps to get you to your ultimate destination. That's the best advice I'd give.
Wonderful, powerful advice. My guest today is Mark Elwood, reminding you that everybody in the meeting has the right and the responsibility to improve the dynamics.
That's it, George. You got it.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.